May it please the court, Alexandra Walsh for Appellant AIG. Question presented by this case is whether documents that have never, that were not created by a court, have not been filed with a court, and have never been considered by a court for any purpose, are nonetheless judicial records subject to a public right of access. The answer is no. The district court reached a contrary conclusion by applying an erroneous legal standard. It held that the independent consultant reports, which we refer to as the IC reports, are judicial records because they were relevant or related to an adjudicatory proceeding. But the right of access to judicial records is not a right of access to any document relevant or related to an adjudicatory proceeding. Rather, as this court's cases in such as Washington Legal Foundation and United States versus LSIA make clear, the right of access to judicial records is a specifically defined right to documents that memorialize or record a judicial decision and to the record upon which that decision was rendered. In other words, to documents that played an actual role in the adjudicatory process.
This case, though, does look a little bit like Amadeo.
This case is distinguishable from Amadeo, Your Honor, for the following reasons. Most importantly, in Amadeo involved a court-appointed officer. That officer was supervised by the court, owed duties to the court, and exercised the powers of the court. The Second Circuit in Amadeo likened the court-supervised officer to a court-appointed receiver. For that reason, the court officer filed reports with the court, and the court used those reports to supervise the court officer's activities. At the time that access to the court officer's reports were requested, the court had already reviewed the reports in connection with carrying out its adjudicatory functions, specifically supervising the activities of the court officer. This case is wholly different. Contrary to what Ms. Reisinger tries to portray in her brief, the independent consultant in this case bears no resemblance to the kind of court-controlled officer that was at issue in Amadeo. The independent consultant was not supervised by the court, owed no duties to the court, and did not exercise any court-appointed officers. Any court-appointed powers. Moreover, the reports that the independent consultant created in this case were never filed with the district court for any purpose. Those reports, instead, by the terms of the consent, were provided to AIG and to the SEC and to DOJ. Now, the SEC reviewed the reports, and if the SEC had ever found reason in the 8 years since final judgment to think that the reports indicated a lack of compliance by AIG with the consent, the SEC could have filed the reports with the court in a motion seeking enforcement. But in the 8 years since final judgment, the SEC had never found reason to do so. The reports were never before the district court for any purpose. They're not part of any record upon which any judicial decision or any adjudicatory function was ever based. And so for that reason, they're not judicial records, and we submit that the Second Circuit's opinion in Amadeo is wholly distinguishable. The independent consultant here was not controlled by the court, as I mentioned, and there was never any reason for those reports to be before the court.
If we ruled against you here, what are the implications for future cases?
The implications are immense.
What are some examples of problems that you think would be created?
Well, looking first just at this particular type of action, SEC enforcement actions, as we describe in our briefing, this type of settlement, the type of settlement that the SEC was able to obtain from AIG is a very commonplace way of resolving these cases. And as the SEC is on record in this proceeding, its ability to obtain this type of settlement in these cases would be severely jeopardized if the independent consultant reports were released. The SEC is also on record that these reports serve an important public policy function. They provide an independent and candid assessment of the compliance efforts undertaken by corporations, which allows the SEC to, among other things, assess whether further corrective action is needed. And what makes these reports so effective, again, as the SEC is on record in this proceeding as explaining, is the fact that companies are willing to provide all sorts of information that they might not be willing to provide if they knew that the reports could someday be accessible to the public as judicial records. This includes information that would otherwise be privileged and highly sensitive proprietary business information, not just information of AIG in this case, but information concerning AIG's customers. If AIG had known at the time that it entered into this settlement that these reports could be released to the public, its willingness to be so forthcoming in providing that information would undoubtedly have been affected. And that's true for future cases as well. And the implications are not just limited to the kind of SEC enforcement action that we have at issue here. DOJ routinely enters into consent decrees to settle, for example, discrimination claims brought under Title VII and Title IX. Those actions are routinely settled by consent decrees. Consent decrees like the ones we have at issue here. They require public schools, public employers, and other entities to engage in voluminous record keeping and other types of reporting to ensure their compliance with the consent decree. Those records often include personal, sensitive information about students, employees, and others. If the district court's conception of judicial records is allowed to stand in this case, suddenly all of those documents would be subject to a presumptive right of public access by the public for anyone to make use of as they might. And it is for that reason that the district court's broad-ranging conception cannot stand in this case. It's also inconsistent with the clear law that the court has set forth in United States versus El Saeg, for example. In that case, what the court explained is that a judicial record includes a document that memorializes a judicial decision or act and the record upon which that decision is rendered. And that makes sense because the meaning and legal import of a judicial decision is a function of the record upon which it is rendered. But that principle assumes that a decision has been made. And in this case, the IC reports have never been the basis for any judicial decision or other adjudicatory function.
One thing that seems curious in this case, and maybe it's just an aberration, but the court here seemed to put a lot of weight on the fact that confidentiality was a determination made by the court. In other words, that otherwise perhaps there would have been access through FOIA for these documents.
Well, Ms. Reisinger did seek access to these documents under FOIA from the SEC, and the SEC properly denied her FOIA request based on the fact that there is a confidentiality agreement that limits the dissemination of these reports to the parties, to the entities specifically identified in the consent. But importantly, even if that confidentiality provision did not exist, FOIA still would not permit access to these documents. As the court knows, there are various exemptions to the right of public disclosure that FOIA creates. Exemptions for trade secrets, confidential commercial information, confidential financial information, and also Exemption 7, which covers information that is gathered and retained by the government for law enforcement purposes. So even if the confidentiality provision that does exist and does apply to the IC reports in this case were not in place, FOIA would not be an avenue available to Ms. Reisinger as a basis for obtaining access to these reports. Importantly, the parties, as is made clear in the record, the parties always understood that the IC reports were confidential documents and that the dissemination of these documents would be restricted to the entities specifically identified in the consent decree. Ms. Reisinger's attempt to now obtain these documents by claiming a right of access to the documents as judicial records or as public records or under the First Amendment would completely subvert the purpose of that confidentiality agreement. And and I should mention the First Amendment, which is the alternative basis that Ms. Reisinger asserts for affirmance here. This court has not ever extended the right, First Amendment right of access to court proceedings outside of the criminal context. And even if that right of access did have some application in the civil context, it's important to remember what the right guarantees is access to court proceedings. There's no basis in historical precedents or otherwise for extending that First Amendment right to documents that have never been part of any court proceeding. If the court doesn't have any further questions, I'll reserve.
May it please the court. My name is Josh Wheeler, counsel for Appellee Sue Reisinger. It is irrefutable that allowing access to the reports prepared by the independent consultant to the IC will serve the animating principle of the common law right of access, namely to allow the public to provide the public with insight into the actions of those who govern in order to assess the correctness of those actions.
Who do you have in mind as those who governed in that sentence? Because the access to judicial records is normally considered to address the behavior of the judges.
That's correct.
And how does this have any bearing on the behavior of any court?
The court, in the final judgment, approved of the consent decree. In approving of the consent decree contained a mechanism for the assessment of AIG's compliance with the final adjudication. We need to see those reports in order to assess the court's dependence upon such a mechanism in resolving these sorts of cases, whether it's appropriate for the court to rely on these sorts of...
Yeah, but the court made that decision ex ante, before the documents came into existence. So, I suppose you could argue that it's nice to have an after-the-fact check on how it all worked out, but normally verifying how someone has acted is on the basis of the materials the person had to act on at the time he or she acted.
I would agree that normally that is the case, Your Honor. But
you appear
in this
to be
case,
ready to make an exception, which opens the door to sort of disclosure of all documents that come into existence as a sequel to a lawsuit.
We don't feel that that's correct, Your Honor. Our position is that under the test in El Saiga, the assessment of whether a document or a material is a judicial record is the role that it played in the judicatory process. That was the standard that
and these documents played no role whatever in the adjudicatory process.
We would disagree with that, Your Honor. We do disagree with that, Your Honor. In this sense, the documents, the consent decree, which the court incorporated into the final judgment, contained a number of factors that showed that the content of the reports did in fact play a part in its decision.
I'm sorry, the content of the reports yet to be created?
Because, Your Honor, in the consent decree and in the final judgment, the court set forth what the contents of those reports were to be, which were really, you could divide them essentially into two categories. First, the court said, we're going to have a report on these previous actions of AIG. These are the looking back documents, the examination of these particular transactions and then the policies of the court, policies of AIG in dealing with counterparties. That's the retro part. But the court also had directed the independent consultant to provide reports of forward-looking policies of AIG, and in the sense of saying we want you to provide, one of the responsibilities it gave the IC was to monitor the actions of the Transaction Review Committee, which was set up under the consent decree. Therefore, it's not accurate to say that the IC hadn't, that Judge Kessler had no idea of what the content of these reports were to be.
I don't think that's the issue. The question for the judicial records provision on access is to evaluate the meaning and significance of a judicial act. And that's on the basis, looks at what the act was based on. If in future litigation, the court acts on the basis of some of these reports, then those reports would presumably come under the provision.
Again, Your Honor, the court did act on the basis of what these documents were to be.
That's the critical.
But the court laid out specific directions as to what the reports were to contain. The only information that the courts did not have at the time of the approval of the consent decree about what was going to go into those reports was the final conclusions of the independent consultant regarding AIG's involvement in the previous transactions and AIG's adherence to the Transaction Review Committee. That information, I assert, is irrelevant to the question of whether it played a role in the judicary process.
On the played a role point, how can something, just putting that aside, how can something be a judicial record if it's never been filed or submitted to the court at all? I mean, just on the common sense of the term.
Right. Well, in this sense, Your Honor, it did play a role in the sense that the court directed the independent consultant to produce these reports dealing with this subject matter.
But they were never submitted back to the court, never filed back to the court, right? And there's been no, am I right, Ms. Walsh says there's been no case that's ever held that something that hasn't been filed or submitted to the court can be a judicial record for these purposes, right?
Well, that's true, Your Honor, but I would assert that that should not be a negative factor in the assessment of the common law right of access. This isn't a question of statutory construction.
You're asking us to create a new rule, I think inconsistent with the Third Circuit. No court's ever done this for something that seems beyond the common sense of the term judicial record.
I would disagree, Your Honor. We're not asking the court to create a new rule. The rule is the rule that this court set forth.
So extend the rule to a place no court before has ever extended it, right?
To make a finding in terms of the common law that the principles of the common law and the right of access apply to the circumstance. Yes, that's what we're asking the court.
Doesn't this even go beyond what we rejected in LCR? It's there that the actual document had been in court.
Our position.
These documents have never.
Our position, Your Honor.
Before a judge's eyes.
Our position, Your Honor, is that these reports have significance beyond their actual content. That it's the importance that these reports were to be created, that clearly played a role in Judge, as a factual matter, that clearly played a role in Judge Kessler's decision to enforce the, to sign the final judgment. further, as I said, she had in her order, she knew what these reports were to cover, and that should be enough in terms of serving the purpose of the common law right of access, which is to provide the public with access and insight into court action. And the court action that we're looking to here, Your Honor, is that the Judge Kessler set up a mechanism for determining compliance with the consent decree. The question is, as a matter of public interest, was that an appropriate mechanism for her to set up? Does that effectively serve the common law principle, the common law right of access? And we assert that it does, because it certainly fulfills the function of allowing the public greater insight into the actions of the government. It may be that once we see those reports, we determined that this wasn't a very good idea. But that's the whole point of the right of access. The point is to allow us, allow the public, to assess the actions of the court. The court in this case approved this sort of mechanism. We need to know, see those reports in order to know if it was appropriate for Judge Kessler to do so. So now, if the court, we don't feel, obviously, that the existence of an actual piece of paper at the time of the approval of the consent decree is a necessary component to meet this duty, the standard of LSIAC. However, if this court determines that that is the case, you have all that you need in the consent decree. Because, as I said, the consent decree contains the order that the IC was to be created. It contains the order that the IC was to write these reports. And it lays out the subject matter of what the IC...
I'm sorry, you lost me. The consent decree is open, right?
It is.
So all these things you're reciting about the consent decree, there's no dispute about.
But the reports...
The wisdom of the court's approval of the consent decree can be judged on the basis of everything that was available for the court at the time of that approval.
My time is up. May I have time to answer the question?
Sure.
Thank you. Yes, the consent decree, and everyone agrees on that, but these reports, given their integral part of the consent decree, that they were to be produced, the consent decree's order that these reports were to be produced and were to cover these particular subject matter, the IC reports were simply supplements to the consent decree. And the only way that we can possibly evaluate the value of the, fully evaluate the appropriateness of the consent decree as being incorporated into the final judgment is to be able to see those reports of the independent consultant. Thank you, Your Honor.
Did counsel have any time left? All right. We will give you 2 minutes if you need it.
I don't think I need it. Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.